You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and you said what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. After taking last week off, we're back this week to chat about CM Punk, Matt Morgan, Bound for Glory, Jerry Lawler, and much more. My name is David, and I'm joined as always by my good friend Alex. How are things going, bud?
They're going very well, David. Very happy to do the show with you again.
Yeah, good to be back on the air. We had a little mini vacation last week, and a lot happened. It's the crazy thing about professional wrestling. You take a week off, and you know, there's always something to talk about, right?
Yeah, the last time we did a radio show, we had the producer of the ECW documentary, and the thing got funded. So this December, there should be some DVDs where we get to see the project that we discussed with him about on this very show, David.
Right, John Filipovich joining us 2 weeks ago, and I was thrilled to hear the news that they got enough money through Kickstarter that they're going to go ahead with the ECW documentary.
It'll be very interesting because, I mean, you can go back in the archives and download the radio show and hear what David and I asked him. And then I liked what he had to say when we interviewed him, so I'm looking forward to the documentary.
Well, and he said it was basically the most stressful month of his life, waiting to see if they were going to raise enough money. So it just felt good for him. I feel good, Alex, for anybody who has a passion to do something creatively like this, you know, and then he's going to be able to go forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss on the show today. What do you think? Should we get started?
Yeah, let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. WWE's Night of Champions was generally regarded as a good pay-per-view. CM Punk and John Cena headlined the show and delivered a solid main event. Alex, where does Punk versus Cena rank among the great WWE feuds of all time?
You know, that's a very, very difficult question to answer because there's been some legendary feuds in World Wrestling Entertainment, but to totally go off track, I think this kind of is notable as far as Cena's being a top guy because this is the second guy who wasn't quite at his level that he feuded with and I guess kind of made to be at his level because he had the very famous feud with Edge early in his career when Edge was essentially kind of in the CM Punk role where he was a name, but he wasn't, you know, one of the bigger, more profile guys on the show. And this is kind of the second guy that Cena has gotten involved with and raised his profile. But as an all-time feud, it's hard to say. They've definitely had some critically acclaimed matches. What are your thoughts on this, David?
I think we've had a pretty good series of matches going back here the past couple years. And you know, when I think about these two guys, they kind of remind me a little bit, go with me on this, of kind of like the Hulk Hogan-Randy Savage dynamic. In that Savage, you know, was always trying to you know, be better than Hogan. And I guess, you know, and Punk's got the whole Macho Man tie-in anyway with the elbow drop and the trunks he wears sometimes. You know, Hogan, very Cena-like, or vice versa. So, I don't know. To me, it kind of feels a little bit like a throwback feud. And, you know, CM Punk wants respect. And I think it's been pretty entertaining because both these guys can deliver in the ring. They're very strong on the microphone. I told you this before. I think Cena gets a bit of a bad rap. I like him. I can understand why people don't like him. But I think he's certainly worked well with Punk here. What did you think about the false finish at Night of Champions?
I wasn't really a fan of it because it kind of draws back to SummerSlam when they did a very similar finish with Alberto Del Rio and Rey Sheamus. There's a lot of these pins, visual pins, that are a little bit disputed. I'm not a big fan of it. My opinion is, you know, if you can't do a clean finish, then maybe you should consider not doing the match. But unfortunately, I mean, they do run a lot of shows, but
right.
It doesn't help the appeal. I mean, Cena recently had an injury. He's having surgery on, I believe, his elbow. So he might miss Hell in a Cell. But because of that finish at the pay-per-view, it didn't, I don't think it made me want to see a rematch because we have seen so many matches between these two guys.
Yeah, but I didn't want to see this end at Night of Champions, which is, you know, let's face it, the business model is just so different. Like you said, these big matches literally every month now, and I didn't want that match in September in what I consider kind of a throwaway pay-per-view to really kind of end this feud. I mean, I think they need to stretch this on until we get some kind of resolution towards the Royal Rumble when Rock's coming back. But I think these two have good chemistry in the ring, and I like seeing them both at the top of the card.
Oh, definitely. You know, it reminds me of the Raw match they had at Raw 1000. I mean, that was I was highly anticipating that match. And these two guys definitely have something. It's you know, a lot of people do knock Cena, but I mean this is definitely the biggest feud Punk's ever been in since he's been in the company.
A lot has been made about the length of time CM Punk has been champion. WWE even posted a graphic showing how Punk stacks up against the other champions of the past 25 years. Has this helped legitimize the title belts again? Well, for me, it has a little bit. I have always felt that the title belts were important. Some people don't. Some people wouldn't even care if there were championship belts in pro wrestling, and they could focus more on kind of the drama between the wrestlers themselves. But I think that a promotion, if they keep their titles strong, can really tell some good stories around those. So for me, I'm enjoying how they're making a point of how long he's been champion. What about you?
You know, what's very interesting is that before the Monday Night Wars, that was the way things were done. Mm-hmm. The championships were held onto for a very long time, and then during the Monday Night Wars, when they were in direct competition with World Championship Wrestling, they found that if you did a title switch, that a lot of people tuned in the next night on Raw. Mm-hmm. And so that was a practice that they maintained for a while. And honestly, in 2012, with no direct competition, that practice has kind of grown stale and unnecessary. So I'm very happy that they're going back to establishing long title runs, because finally when the title switch does happen, it'll be more effective. Not so long ago, John Cena had broken his neck in a match, and he had to drop the title after he'd been champion, I believe, for over a year, or close to a year. And when the title switch finally happened, it was a big moment. I think we'll have the same thing whenever CM Punk finally does lose the title.
We're building towards that, right? We're building towards what should be an important night when he does lose. And that's kind of why I was okay, again, going back to Night of Champions. I just didn't want Night of Champions to be where this feud ended and the title switched. I thought it was kind of clever storytelling, actually, because they can keep moving forward with it. But, you know, and not only his title, which I do think has been elevated, and he's made it feel important, but I think Sheamus has been a good world champion. And I think that Miz bringing the white Intercontinental title back, that is, by the way, I think the most gorgeous title belt ever created, the Intercontinental title, whether it be the black or the white or the, you know, the yellow. I just think that's the coolest looking belt.
You know, what's interesting is that CM Punk won the world title as a babyface,
mm-hmm.
and he won all of his matches clean for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, as he's been champion for longer and longer, he's starting to resort to different tactics to maintain the title. Now he's using the services of Paul Heyman. It's almost like he's losing a little bit of his edge as a character. And so when
well,
he finally...
You can't beat Cena clean very many times. I mean, the rivalry that he's in kind of requires that they have some kind of screwy endings of storytelling to keep it going and to keep Cena looking strong, no?
What I'm saying is it's almost like a story inside of a story. I mean, he's been champion for a long time, and then what happens when you're on top for a long time, David? You know, the competition doesn't get any easier,
mm-hmm.
and you have to start resorting to different tactics to maintain the title. And, I mean, it was the storyline in Lord of the Rings. You know, you got the ring, and then you went crazy. And I mean, this is kind of, you know...
I was going to make a joke about my wife there, but I thought that was probably better that I didn't.
But, I mean, can you kind of see what I'm saying with Punk, how he's had the title for a long, long time,
yeah.
and now he's starting to resort to, you know, nastier tactics to maintain it and to get people's respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting. So eventually when he does lose the title, it'll be interesting to see where his character goes on from there as well.
Hey, real quick before we move on from this topic, do you like that they brought Paul Heyman in now to work with him?
Absolutely. They have an electric dynamic on television. Every segment they're in, I'm a fan of.
WWE has started broadcasting Saturday Morning Slam, and everything I've read about it is pretty negative. Does this new kid-focused show stand a chance? oh boy, talk about not being a fan of something. I probably should watch it a time or two, but what I've read hasn't been very positive. The matches that have been announced have not been matches I really want to tune in, you know, in a special program to watch. And then they put their special rules that they don't have any headshots because they know kids are watching. This feels like a misfire to me, Alex. Am I off base?
Believe it or not, David, I've actually watched every episode. And this television show is, you know, what's funny is that we didn't have a Saturday Morning Slam to introduce us to professional wrestling. We just started watching the television shows.
Hold on here now. So when you say we started watching the television shows, you mean like Raw on those shows?
Well, no. I mean, Raw wasn't around when I first started watching professional wrestling. We started watching whatever WWF syndicated show was on at the time.
Right.
And those shows were a lot tamer at the time. And we were able to get introduced to characters, the same characters that were the adults were getting into.
Yes.
I feel like World Wrestling Federation as a back in the 80s and 90s, it was adult and kind of kid-friendly until kind of the Attitude Era. So I think it's kind of funny that they think they have to resort all the way back to this elementary programming that if a kid watches Saturday Morning Slam and thinks, hey, I want to watch Raw, they're going to get a vastly different product.
So what did you think of Saturday Morning Slam when you saw it?
I mean, it's just, it's not a very good television show. I mean, there's no... as a child, I was drawn to the big fight like I am as an adult. I mean, I wanted to see the Ultimate Warrior against Hulk Hogan. I wanted to see the matches that they were building to on television. Saturday Morning Slam offers none of that. You essentially see a good guy and a bad guy.
Right.
And then a couple of segments where Damian Sandow will teach you how to spell or something.
Well, that's. I think I may have misunderstood you in the beginning. I thought you said you'd seen everyone that you kind of liked it.
No, absolutely not. No, it's not a very good television show. I've seen every episode.
You know, I grew up, of course, watching Wrestling Challenge, Superstars of Wrestling every week, and I completely agree in that they did do a nice job building towards what would be the payoff matches. And something like Saturday Morning Slam, it just doesn't interest me at all. My son's 8 years old. I don't have a huge problem with him watching Raw, you know, if I would tape it for him. So what is it about the regular programming, Raw and SmackDown, and soon Main Event, which I am excited to watch, or at least check that out when it comes out here, I guess, next month. What is it about those shows, Alex, that they feel aren't appropriate, and this is better, is it just the time frame, Saturday morning?
I guess. I mean, they even censor out all references to WWE.com. If you look at the Raw tapings, you'll see WWE.com on the apron. And they actually edit that out because the website is actually PG-13. It's interesting the world we live in when it comes to that, because like you said, I mean, we both used to watch a syndicated television growing up as a kid, and that stuff was relatively tame, but yet it was able to appeal to an adult and a kid audience, and it seems like we've gone 400 steps backwards to presenting this kid-friendly product on television.
I'm not sure that if a child isn't mature enough to watch SmackDown, they should be watching WWE at all. I mean, I don't think it's that offensive. What would be on there that you that I wouldn't want my 8-year-old to watch?
Absolutely, and I mean the women are pretty tame now. And then on top of that, I don't understand how they intend on keeping the children as fans. Like I said, they're not building up to any matches or anything. It's just random good guy versus random bad guy.
Yeah.
The kid may or may not be familiar with them. I don't think it's very effective television at all.
And with all due respect to Kofi Kingston, like I don't need another Kofi Kingston Jinder Mahal match. You know what I mean?
TNA Wrestling, what is best-case scenario at this point for the Aces and Eights storylines? We are heading into Bound for Glory, which TNA promotes as the biggest show of the year. Best-case scenario, I guess, is for I guess a big reveal to happen and for it to be Stone Cold Steve Austin or someone like that, who I know it wouldn't be. But basically what we've seen for months is these mass attackers attack people in the impact zone. And for a while they were targeting seriously Austin Aries. They attacked and injured his arm, and they also attacked and injured Jeff Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
So now at Bound for Glory, we're having Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy. It'd be interesting to see, that, I guess, if Aces and Eights gets involved then. But his storyline has gone on for such a long time. It almost seems like they have to reveal, I guess, the mastermind behind it, and it has to, I guess, be a bigger name from TNA Wrestling's past. I don't know. It kind of almost seems like they put themselves into a corner on this storyline, and I'm kind of hoping they deliver.
Well, when you say it's gone on for a while, is that part of our new psyche, though, as wrestling fans, where we just want the quick payoff? It's kind of like a microwave-type storytelling, because really back, you know, the Hogan-Savage storyline, I'm going to go back to it, that played out over 2 years. Is it just that, you know, you're getting a little tired of this after a couple months, or it's just not that strong to keep it going?
Well, it's not that strong to keep it going. I mean, for the NWO storyline, it went on for a few months, and obviously it ended in Bash of the Beach of that year. But you were aware of who the two guys were. And, I mean, they were able to string you out long enough to where you were excited to see the first match between the Outsiders, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. And when they finally did the big reveal of the third guy, it was Hulk Hogan who had been left off television for a long while.
Yeah.
That is kind of best-case scenario for mystery attackers invade the company. This one, like I said, it's on the internet who a lot of these guys are behind the mask. And if they take off the mask, it's not going to be, oh, there's Festus from WWE or there's Mike Knox. They're not going to really drop you dead when they take off the mask. But they kind of have to have someone behind them who's a big enough name. A name like Jeff Jarrett, I guess, would come to mind. It has to be a name of that caliber, I guess.
Right, so let me ask you this. We talked earlier about the importance of championship belts. These kind of storylines with the masks, and, you know, even in WWE now with, you know, oh, God, you know, Cody Rhodes is obsessed with taking off Sin Cara's mask, or I never understood hair versus hair matches and those kind of things. What other payoffs are there, Alex? I know, like, Rock and Cena was big because of the year built to it. But if we're not talking about championship belts or building people to championship belts, what are the real payoffs that do matter to you? Taking off a mask, who cares? I never cared if anyone got their hair cut. What works for you?
Unless you intend on rolling these guys out as Masked Invader 1 and Masked Invader 2, then that's one thing. But unfortunately, wrestling has created a climate to where if there's a mystery guy attacking, you have to take off the guy's mask and do the big reveal. And I find it interesting that you're not into gimmick matches, because things like loser leaves town or hair matches have always been something that's interesting to me.
Oh, no. I like loser leaves town because I feel like that's an important thing. I can't wrestle here anymore. I can't be part of the story. I don't care if I get my hair cut. You know.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I remember when Kurt Angle did, and I thought it was they always turned into a fun storyline, I guess.
You know, Brutus the Barber Beefcake would bring out, like, hedge clippers. You know? Like, what? Stupidest thing.
We are finally getting the Bobby Roode and James Storm match to settle the score. Will this match feel bigger than the others? They've gone down the street, around the corner, 5 miles to finally present what's going to, I guess, come across as the blow-off match. This is the biggest pay-per-view of the year.
Uh-huh.
This is the match they've been building up for almost a year now. I mean, the day after the last year's Bound for Glory in Florida is when James Storm won the title from Kurt Angle, and that's what kind of started this whole storyline. I think once it gets in the ring, it's going to feel like a bigger match, but it's going to be interesting seeing how they build up this match the next few weeks on television. I'll tell you, at Lockdown, I think they really had the audience really wanting James Storm to beat Bobby Roode, and sometimes, you know, when the audience really wants something, sometimes you don't have to give it to them, but then you kind of have to come with something better, if you know what I mean, David.
Yeah, I think they've had, you know, a good series of matches to this point and a good build here. And when you ask, you know, will it feel bigger than the others, it better feel bigger than the others. Because, like you said, this Bound for Glory, big pay-per-view, I still feel as a wrestling fan, even though the type of storytelling has changed over the years, I still want to feel big moments. Does that make sense? You know, where I like Rock and Cena, to me, did feel like a big moment this past April. And at Bound for Glory, I want to feel like these matches on that show are bigger than the previous ones they had. And so for Bobby Roode and James Storm, it better feel bigger. I think it will, and I'm expecting a good match here.
Sure. I mean, unfortunately, you know, they've kind of had to tell you this is our equivalent to WrestleMania. But if a show is big, they shouldn't have to tell you it's big. You should kind of get a feeling about it, anticipating it, and then going into it, wow, that was a big show. That's the unfortunate thing with being the number two company, I guess, that you're never – they shouldn't use the word WrestleMania, you know.
Right.
They should just promote it, and if it sticks, it sticks, you know. I mean, your biggest show, you might not be able to dictate to your fans what your biggest show is. I mean, Lockdown historically has been a big show for them as well because of its uniqueness of all cage match show. Yeah, but this match kind of has to deliver because this is kind of the big match they've been building for a year for.
Well, you're right. It's like if you have to explain a joke, it wasn't a very good joke, or if someone has to tell you that they're smart, you know, they aren't very smart. You know what I mean? I mean, if this is their biggest show, which that should be self-evident. They should. But my question though for you though is, what do you think's next for these guys? Because once in a while you build towards a big storyline, you get the blow off, and then you better have something else for Bobby Roode and James Storm to do to keep them relevant in TNA. Do you see that on the horizon?
You know, it's all going to, I guess, depend on coming out of this match. I mean, this match could potentially raise these guys' profile, maybe raise these guys' stock, depending on what kind of a match they have. Having Jeff Hardy in the main event may increase eyeballs. Jeff Hardy is a well-known star, and maybe him being in the main event of the show will increase it. So it kind of has to wait until, I guess, the results of the show to find out where each guy goes. I guess it'll be very interesting seeing the build up to this show because, like I said, this whole show is kind of this is one of the more important matches on this upcoming Bound for Glory pay per view. While other talent have been released from TNA, it seems that Matt Morgan is being brought back to the company. Is this a good move? We discussed a couple weeks ago about TNA's cuts and how they were letting some well-known talent go, for example, Velvet Sky. And recently at the house show, we've seen Matt Morgan run in, and it appears by all signs that he's going to return to the company. You know, that day I said I was fine with whatever cuts TNA felt like they had to make. I mean, if you kind of, you know, I guess past your expiration date as a talent, you know, the company really couldn't do much with you, it's fine to let you go and then bring you back at another time. And this is kind of what they've done with Matt Morgan. I was just never a fan of his as a talent. So his bringing him back is kind of, it doesn't get me excited, David.
I always look at these things on kind of a case-by-case basis. You ask, is Matt Morgan coming back to the company a good move? It sure could be. It really all depends how they use them. I don't look at it like, wow, they've let a bunch of people go and they shouldn't be looking to rehire. They always, you know, you always got to keep the rosters fresh. And if they bring Matt Morgan back in the right way and give him a good storyline, I think it can be fine. What I find interesting about the TNA is that I don't think they worry about letting people go and having them show up on Vince's company. You know, they don't worry about letting people go and having to show up on Monday Night Raw and helping Raw's ratings. But that's not really the case for WWE. Like, when Randy Orton gets in trouble for the 100th time, they're not going to cut Randy Orton for violations of the substance abuse because they really don't want Randy Orton on Impact. Is that a fair statement?
Well, right now I believe it is. World Wrestling Entertainment actually has shown interest in a couple of pieces of talent that TNA has, most notably Alex Shelley and Ric Flair, who recently were released by TNA. And because of a lawsuit happening right now, World Wrestling Entertainment is unable to sign talent that have been signed to TNA for any type of contract, whether it be a one-day contract or whatever.
No, but so, I'm not saying they never bring them at all. I'm just saying I think TNA, they can be secure enough in just making their own moves for their own company. WWE, you're never going to let John Cena go.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, there's going to be some talents that World Wrestling Entertainment isn't interested in. Unfortunately, TNA doesn't have the ability to cycle these guys down the Ohio Valley, which is currently the developmental system for TNA, and give these guys work down there while they take them off television. But World Wrestling Entertainment does, and something I pleaded for years is for guys on television to go down to the developmental system and work with those guys. And recently we've seen CM Punk do that, most notably in a tag team match with the former Tyler Black against the former Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli. It's definitely the company are in two different positions.
And I think that we sometimes feel like we really know what's going on behind the scenes, but I bet managing a lot of these personalities and running a wrestling company is a real bear. And so we don't know maybe all the reasons or the real reasons why some of these people are let go or some of these people are brought back.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what it all boils down to, absolutely. And even people who are inside aren't that inside because a lot of conversations happen and no one can be aware of everything. So, absolutely. I mean, this is totally just opinion-based, I guess.
Yeah. Wildcard topic number one. Well, Alex, since we did our radio program last, Jerry the King Lawler had a serious heart attack live on air on Monday Night Raw 2 weeks ago. Now, he does seem to be recovering nicely. Obviously, the WWE's supporting doctors, the medical staff did a great job handling the situation that night. But should the WWE have stopped the show right at that spot? What do you think about that? How did you feel the WWE handled that night with the scary situation with Jerry Lawler?
You know, that's actually a very, very difficult question to answer. I think it was good that they stayed live on the air. I mean, Michael Cole's last update of the day was kind of promising, one that they were able to get into the hospital, and it appeared like everything was going to be okay. I couldn't finish watching the show. I had to watch the Monday Night Football game that night, which was actually convenient because it was San Diego Chargers and Oakland Raiders, which is one of the biggest games of the year.
Right.
So I had something convenient to turn off to. I guess, you know, I don't blame the company in this instance for continuing on with the show, especially considering that Jerry Lawler is now in a lot better state.
Well, I think it's always easy for us to sit at home and say what Vince should do or what a TV company should do, but if it was, you know, it was you making the final decision, there's a lot more weight on it than someone sitting at home with a beer in their hand, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, I mean, there's a lot of ramifications to canceling the show. I mean, there's ads have already been sold based off a when ads are sold, from what I understand, they're sold at a lowest rating interval or whatever. So, basically, ads had already been sold. USA is expecting a product. And the guy didn't die, as harsh as that sounds. So, I mean, you have to take all things in consideration and make a split-second call. Oh, by the way, I've known Jerry Lawler for, you know, 20-something years. Speaking as Vince McMahon, who's known Jerry Lawler at least since he brought him into the company in 93, and you have to assume before that, probably in passing. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a very difficult decision to do. Most notably, when Owen Hart died in the middle of the ring, they also continued the show, which is a little bit more controversial decision, I think, than this one was.
Yeah, and I've read a lot about the comparisons. I don't think that you can directly compare them. You know, like you said, a little harsh, but Jerry Lawler did not die. Also, Owen Hart's was different because it was involved with a stunt. It was involved in the ring, if you will, where, you know, we could be watching Monday Night Football next week and you know, God forbid, one of the ESPN announcers has a heart attack or something. It's just, you know, that could happen in any live broadcast. I think the Owen Hart thing is different. I think WWE did the right thing here. And I thought that it was important the show went on here because we wanted to know how Jerry was doing. And Michael Cole, I thought, did a good job. He was emotional, but not overly emotional. Ironic, considering that those two butt heads all the time. You could see, Alex, the affection that he really does feel for Jerry Lawler, which to me was kind of comforting.
You know, it's almost somewhat comparable, I guess, to we've seen in pro football where someone will take a massive hit, David, mm-hmm. and they'll be convulsing on the ground, or maybe they get hit in the head wrong and they injure their neck. We've seen traumatic things like that happen before in the NFL and college football, mm-hmm. but the game continues, and in this situation, I guess, you know, given the information that they had, they decided the game should continue. So it's not someone dying in the middle of the ring. And honestly, if you want to say they should have stopped the show, I think you're entitled to that opinion. But I think World Wrestling Entertainment was entitled to do what they did, and I definitely won't crucify them for doing it.
And it sounds like Jerry Lawler's feeling better, so that's great news.
Absolutely. Wild card topic number two. Ring of Honor had eye pay-per-view problems again. Will this be the straw that breaks the camel's back as far as fans ordering iPay-per-views from the company? David, this was a massive hit. Basically, they ran their pay-per-view this Saturday night, and it had internet problems once again. And this has been a string for this company dating back to the WrestleMania weekend shows in Florida, which one day was an issue with the pay-per-view provider at the time, which was Go Fight Live. And then next night, there was actually a brownout in Miami where they were restricting power to the building they were actually in, which caused their iPay-per-view feed to go out. And so that prompted Ring of Honor to go with their own iPay-per-view service, which they've had a problem the first time they ran a pay-per-view, and most notably this past Saturdays. Personally, I can say honestly that I always enjoyed Ring of Honor's product, but due to the fact that there's been so many iPay-per-view problems, David, I don't order the pay-per-views anymore. And I can't say that I would be the only person that didn't do it.
That is bad news for Ring of Honor if people like yourself are not ordering them. right? Because you are a fan. You're a bigger Ring of Honor fan than I am, obviously. And if people like yourself aren't buying those pay-per-views, that there's a certain percentage that's going to start hurting the company, hurting the bottom line there. I've said this before with previous examples of problems with technology. It just can't happen in today's day and age. It just can't happen. Whatever the situation was and why it happened, it's inexcusable because it's just not fair to the people that ordered it. They get frustrated. A certain percentage is not going to come back. Alex, what about for the wrestlers themselves? I mean, are they notified that, like, this crap's going on? And, you know, how do they feel about, you know, working a show that there's all these technical issues?
You know, I mean, I don't know at what level the wrestlers are even aware of. I know in Miami, because I was talking to one of my friends who was there live in the building, is that they did a lot of things to stall the match. So you can kind of tell that those two guys were aware of what was happening on the pay-per-view because they took measures to kind of not, you know, they did a lot of interviews and such. So this one, I'm not sure how much awareness the company had or the wrestlers had. Definitely, I mean, if I'm one person and I've made the decision, then there has to be many others just like me who have made the decision, especially after this past one. And the way the company handled this one was kind of poor as well, giving fans only 24 hours to submit notices for a refund, and then that you would be given access to and if you didn't ask for a refund, your options were to get the access to the iPay-per-view and a DVD copy of the show. But the thing about pay-per-view, David, is the live aspect.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, maybe you should have been given access and gotten a refund, you know. It's a tough situation for the company as well. I mean, it's a tough situation, but at the end of the day, when you offer a product to your fans, it has to work 100% of the time. Or you lose your fans' loyalty, which independent companies and companies not named World Wrestling Entertainment, that's all they have at the end of the day, David, is their fans' loyalty. And if they do anything to ruin that trust, David, then you might as well send out the rafts because the company's going to fold.
That's very well said, and I like your point. Results are available almost instantaneously now in almost every wrestling show. Sites do a great job on the Internet just giving you results. And if you're not watching it live, I don't want to watch it the next day when I could read the results from the night before. This is a major, major black mark. Let's hope that they don't have these problems because Ring of Honor is a good company.
Absolutely. A lot of great people involved with that company.
Last from the past. Recently, I watched WrestleMania 5 again. And while I was watching Akeem dance around the ring with Slick, I couldn't help but think, boy, I really liked him better as the one-man gang. What are some of the worst and best character switches of all time, Alex?
One that instantly comes to my mind is Jacques Rougeau, when he went from being one half of the Rougeau brothers, which were awesome, as their American gimmick. I don't know if you remember that, but they were... fans of America, and then he became the Mountie. And the Mountie was such an awesome kind of classic character with his shocker, and that is a all-time great switch, in my opinion. One of the sillier ones, I guess, was Kerry Von Erich, who was a big regional star in Texas. I mean, David, Kerry Von Erich was a big name. And when he went to World Wrestling Federation, he became the Texas Tornado. What was the Texas Tornado, David?
It was he had a big tornado punch as a finisher. It was just brutal. I'm glad you brought that one up.
Absolutely. So those two come to mind. And, I mean, there are many, many other others. For example, I think one of the worst ones of all time is when Dustin Runnels or Goldust returned to WCW and he did vignettes for a character called Seven. And finally, yeah, then Seven debuted and then he cut a promo about how hokey and dumb it was and that he didn't want to be Seven. And we've seen classic character switches throughout the years. What comes to your mind, David?
Well, the Texas Tornado is a great one. And I did like the Mountie, too. That was another good one because, well, he, you know, going from a tag team to an individual star maybe required some repackaging. Even Shawn Michaels, of course, is the Rockers going into HBK. Hey, let's not forget, you know, the great repackaging of Steve Austin. You know, and The Rock, how it was being Rocky Maivia. Even The Undertaker going from the dead man to the American badass. The one thing I don't like, Alex, is when they take a character like Nikolai Volkov, who's a classic bad guy Russian, and then make him like an American sympathizer.
that was very popular in the early 90s to do that. They also switched Sergeant Slaughter a couple times during that era as well.
I didn't like that either. But to me, the all-time worst is Terry Taylor coming in and they made him the Red Rooster.
You know, there was the character of Mr. Perfect, and that Curt Hennig and Terry Taylor got signed at the same time. And there was the potential that Terry Taylor was actually going to play the Mr. Perfect character.
That's good. That's good knowledge that you just passed on us. That was a knowledge sandwich right there.
And speaking of Dustin Reynolds, like I brought him up earlier, one of the all-time great character transformations was from Dustin Rhodes, the character, the cowboy they played in WCW, mm-hmm. to Goldust in World Wrestling Federation, where he completely debuted a new character, and at the time was one of the more effective heels, I think, in that company's time.
Yeah, no, that was good. What was not good is what I thought they did to his father, bringing him in as the plumber, wearing the polka dots. Obviously, you know, kind of a rib on him in some ways, but I didn't care for that at all.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, who was a literal dragon. I mean, we could literally go on and on with historical repackagings of guys, because World Wrestling Federation, they were certainly very liberal with their creative juices during that time.
The Texas Tornado, though, that's a great call. Great call. Before we wrap, I wanted to tell you something, Alex. I just got back from Memphis. They made a less of a deal, you should know this, they made a less of a deal about my arrival there this past week than they did about Jerry Lawler's. I thought that was unfair, but I was in town in Memphis for business, and have you ever been there?
No, but I want to go because my wife and I love barbecue and we want to eat at Rendezvous.
That's a good spot, and it's certainly not the only spot. They have amazing food down there. I like cities that have a real energy about them, kind of a different energy that you feel at some other places. And Memphis has a great, great energy. Of course, Beale Street, people may or may not realize, is really like a mini Bourbon Street. And it's always got stuff going on. It's really a lot of fun. Great music, great food. Of course, Elvis and Graceland is always a lot of fun. I'm a big Memphis Grizzlies fan, so I like the local sports scene there. I've been going there for about 10 years for work and just absolutely love it. Now, the thing is, when you visit someplace for business, it's a lot different than living somewhere, right?
Absolutely.
So I don't think that I'm going to pack up, you know, our house here in the Washington, D.C. area and move down there. And really, Memphis has a pretty seedy underbelly. I mean, it's got some real areas of poverty and crime and things like that. I mean, I can't live at the Doubletree Hotel, you know, and just go to TGI Fridays every night to watch Monday Night Football. So, but if you haven't been to Memphis, you really should go. It's a city with a lot of history, a lot of really down-to-earth people, and the Memphis Redbirds are there, the Cardinals AAA. So I recommend it. If you get a chance, and you and your wife would absolutely love Rendezvous.
You know, you bring up TGI Fridays and Monday Night Football. You're a football fan, correct, David?
Big Cowboys fan.
You know, and maybe this question will sting a little bit, but why do we read so much in the Week 1 results? It seems like we do it every single year. Basically, a team has all, since when the schedules are announced until Week 1, to prepare for one specific team, and it seems like we see a lot of teams that have impressive performances, and then as the season plays out, we really see what these teams are about. And then, David, once they go to the playoffs, it's a completely different game. I mean, we see teams that look impressive all year, like the Green Bay Packers, go to the playoffs and lose the very first game. Football fans, let's not read everything in the Week 1.
Yeah.
People were ready to crown Robert Griffin III the greatest quarterback ever drafted, and were ready to call Andrew Luck the greatest bust ever. But this past Sunday, Andrew Luck had an incredible game, and Robert Griffin III had a good game as well. But that's something I'm very excited about, to see those two quarterbacks mature. But fans, let's not read too much in the Week 1.
Yeah. Colin Cowherd on ESPN calls it Overreaction Monday. And it's never more true than in Week 1. But part of it, though, Alex, don't you think it's because we've been waiting for football all summer, waiting, and we want hope. We want to see that our team is different from the year before, and if they play well, we're ready to print Super Bowl tickets, and if they don't play well, it's like, oh, it's the same bums we had last year. It's the weekly nature of the sport, too. Baseball, they play every day, and so the stories from the night before, you kind of forget them and you go into the next day.
Absolutely. I mean, you're ready to see the new names that are on your team. I mean, the San Diego Chargers have a brand new wide receiver core. Eddie Royal and Robert Meacham, I believe. And so I'm very excited to see how they interact with Phillip Rivers.
Yep.
So you're excited to see all the new players on your team and how they're going to interact with each other. But and when you see glimmers of hope, you know, maybe you put a little bit too much stock in it.
Yep.
But Yeah, let's not crown the Super Bowl champions week one.
Yeah, I was watching a little bit of the Giants game. I saw the first quarter. I'm going to finish watching it now, and they looked fantastic. So, you know, they got beaten week one, and they look like they're getting their act together here already in just week three. So, listen, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David.
And this is Alex.
And we hope you enjoyed the program. Alex, I really enjoyed being back on the air with you this week, and we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care. We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well that's okay.